And welcome to We the People Radio. Or not. There we go. Alrighty, you are catching us on Father's Day if you're listening live. And so happy Father's Day to all the dads out there. Say something, Bill.
Hi out there. Oh, there we go. I got sound again. A little technical difficulty.
We had sound the whole time.
We had sound, but we turned it down too far because we thought it was up really loud, but the commercials were just loud. What's up with that?
I was lip syncing.
So my name is Aaron Ryan.
And I'm Bill Cundiff.
And I'm Bob Martin.
And today we're talking about the climate. We promised we would do a climate show. The Paris Climate Agreement came and went, and we never said anything about it. We were all hung up on national security and stuff. All that darn national security stuff keeps popping up and being an emergency.
Well, we need to get to the bottom of the climate thing, because as soon as we got out of that deal, it hit 100, and now it's going getting hotter again. And
it is.
We got a serious problem.
It is super hot today. So we have two great guests for you. First hour is Anthony Watts, and the second hour we have G. Edward Griffin. So let's see. Anthony Watts, those of us who live local know who Anthony is. He's a former American Meteorological Society. Whew, easy for me to say. He is a certified television meteorologist who spent 25 years on the air, and who also operates a weather technology and content business, as well as continues daily forecasting on radio just for fun. Because we all know radio is actually fun.
You can make it that way.
You can make it that way. Weather measurement and weather presentation technology is his specialty. He also provides weather stations and custom weather monitoring solutions. And you can find all his information at whatsupwiththat.com, but it's W-A-T-T-S, upwiththat.com. So it's a fun site, too. There's a lot on there. Tons on there, actually. So without further ado, jump in, Anthony. You're driving the bus this afternoon.
Oh, goody. I've never driven a bus. I'm not sure I'm appropriately government licensed to drive a bus.
You know
That's
what? All
why
the
you're
more
driving.
Reason, all the more reason you should be driving the bus. We all know the government doesn't do anything well. Don't let them license you. You have a ton of stuff on here. And, you know, I guess I cut the bio short. I mean, it's much longer. If you go to our webpage at wethepeopleradio.us, you can find all the information about our guests, by the way. But Anthony is a green guy in all sorts of ways. So this isn't like all the anti-green guys got together and we're going to talk about this. You've got solar panels and a little car. It's a tell what it is. Is it a smart car?
No, it's not a smart car. It's like a smart car. It's something I got from China back in 2008. And I was actually prepared to start up a business selling these cars. And this is when gasoline prices in California were starting to approach $5 a gallon. And so for most of the travel that people do in automobiles is short trips in the city, picking up the kids, going to the grocery store, running errands, visiting friends, that sort of thing. They're all short trips. And that kind of stuff is perfect for an electric car because, you know, they have limited range and cities are where most of the real pollution problems are. Anyway, to make a long story short, I applied for and was granted a DMV dealer's license and started to import the things. And by the time this is how California works. I ordered these things in May, and by the time they got off the boat and hit the U.S. soil in August, the rules had changed, and the wonderful California Air Resources Board, these are the people that turn diesel engines and truckers into, you know, lawbreakers,
right,
had come up with this rule that said that all cars sold in California, no matter how they're powered, rubber band to gasoline, doesn't matter, have to have a global warming impact sticker on them. And so the cars that I got shipped in were sellable in terms of the DMV. They were fine with it. But if I sold them in California without that stupid global warming impact sticker, even though you could look under the hood, some functionary could come out, look under the hood, say, yep, electric car, no emissions. No, you have to go through the process. You have to go through the testing. all this stuff. You have to file the papers and all of these things. So anyway, I ended up working with the company that I purchased these from in China, who wanted to get a foothold here in the United States, spending about $20,000 to have this special testing done. There's only two places in the United States that you can have it done. One's down in Los Angeles and one's in Detroit. And you have to put the car in this special room with these sniffers, you know, sniffing for dangerous emissions,
right,
along with it being on a dynamometer. And so, you know, they've got no place, there's no tailpipe to shove the sniffers into, so they just leave them lay on the floor, right? So I'm running the car on a dynamometer while the sniffers are sniffing the air off the floor, you know, and it gets the test and everything. And, of course, it passes with flying colors and everything's fine. And the company makes its report, and then I have to fill out a bunch of forms. So anyway, I filled out these forms that the Air Resources Board required. And this was a long process. We're talking months. And I had to maintain an office to keep my DMV license, and I was paying out money. I got all the stuff done. I submitted it to the DMV, and I got this cursory email back. I'm sorry, we no longer accept paper entries.
Nice.
Okay. So they said you have to file it electronically. So I thought, all right, well, just converting it into a PDF. No big deal.
Yeah.
Word filed a PDF. So I converted it to a PDF, and I mailed it to this functionary. Emailed it to this functionary, and she replied, I'm sorry, we have to have you use our document management system in order to submit it. Oh, okay, so I have to submit it online with a special thing. No, it's even worse than that. To use the document management system, you have to be cleared and certified, and you have to take a class to be certified to use their document management system. Then you have to come to Sacramento and take this class.
And how much was the class?
There was no cost for the class, but it was a 3-day class, and you had to get certified. I mean, at that point I said, you know what? And I'm on radio, so I'll bleep myself.
Yes.
Yeah.
No, we're so with you. Open space. Fill the open space with expletives. Oh, that is. And how many little cars did you have?
I had four at that time, and I got one. You have an exemption of one for yourself, and so I drive one, and then I had the other three that were just sitting around collecting dust, and I faced the trauma of having to figure out what to do with them, because if I sold them in California, I'm still liable for up to $25,000 per incident for selling an electric car that might potentially damage the greenhouse gas emission situation.
Because
it doesn't have a sticker. And anyway, so that's that horror story. So, yes, I have an electric car. Do I wish I had another car that's not electric? Yes, I do.
That's just crazy. But that's just so typical of California, though. They want to, you know, set an example for the world and clean the planet's air. But then you get somebody who wants to step forward and actually move in that direction, and you get tangled up in the red tape and the bureaucracy.
God,
the whole time.
You should have called your car business No Good Deed Goes Unpunished. Jeez.
Yeah, that's right. Hey, you remember the fellow that used to do Monster Garage on the Discovery Channel, Jesse James, that built all these cool motorcycles?
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Well, the reason that show's no longer on the air is, again, thanks to the California Air Resources Board. They decided that these motorcycles that he was customizing and selling based on his show, even though the motors were type accepted by the California Air Resources Board, meaning we've looked at these and we've tested them and they're okie dokie, but because they were put together on a new frame and sold as a new product, each one had to be tested. And they fined him $18,000 per motorcycle, and he said, bleep you, and move to Texas.
Oh, my gosh, in 5 minutes.
Yep. And you know, that's exactly what so many companies are doing when they see this coming down the road in California, and it's just fiscally not responsible to stay here. If you want to, make a profit, I know that's a dirty word, but they're moving to Nevada, Arizona, Texas, anywhere but California. And I just wonder how many businesses have to move out before they realize, you know, what we're doing may not really be good for the economy here.
They don't care.
I don't know.
And you couldn't talk to an actual human who was able to actually do anything about the fact that an electric car can't cause emissions.
Oh, I was on the phone arguing with people right and left saying...
No, I mean, I'm sure you tried, but...
Someone checked a box on a form and said, electric, you know, give it an exemption. No, they didn't care. They'd come up with a universal solution for all cars. It didn't matter what their powering was.
Wow.
And get this, the reasoning for this had to do with some electric cars might have a propane-powered heater in them. Ooh.
Uh-oh. Oh, my gosh.
There's a carbon footprint.
And you're heating what, you know, six square, you
yeah.
know, six
three cubic
meters?
Feet.
Of, yeah.
yeah. Yeah, yeah.
Oh, my gosh. That's just, well, I saw the picture of the little blue car that I copied over onto our bio, and I'm like, wonder what kind of car that is. And I didn't recognize the little logo, not like I'm some expert in electric cars, but anyway, kind of sparked my interest there.
Yeah.
Well, thanks for that. Gee, that's a whole different program we talk about all the time, you know, how you can't get there from here in California. It's just too hard.
And the reason that I have solar panels has nothing to do with saving the earth and reducing greenhouse gas emissions. It's hedging for the future of electricity price increases. The only thing that you can do in California to basically control your electricity cost is to get solar panels. If you get solar panels and you're selling back the power to them, well, then you've got some way to control your electricity cost no matter how expensive it gets. And right now, during peak periods, tomorrow is going to be an event day in California, according to PG&E. And that event day means that if you use power between 2 and 7 p.m., it can cost you as much as 80 cents per kilowatt hour.
Mm. Oh,
so,
gosh.
Yeah. So if you've got solar, you don't have to worry about that. You can still run your air conditioning and your whatever.
Yeah, without hearing your wallet, you know, screaming and writhing in pain. Good Lord. These guys, I'll tell you what. And then, you know, we do have the big hydro dam, but that doesn't count as renewable power, so that's a whole different problem. We've got to take a really quick break. We're going to come back with our guest, Anthony Watts. And we've never had him on the show before, but we talk about this kind of thing all the time. And you can find all of his great information at whatsupwiththat, whatsupwiththat.com. And you can find us at wethepeopleradio.us. There you have it.
We'll be back.
Onward to the sound file that won't play. Oh, Bob got it. Nice catch, Bob. They want you all body and soul. Then it's just your body. Then they go. What shall we do about them? Hot town, summer in the city. Back of my neck getting dirty and gritty.
Sidewalk hotter than a match head.
Exactly.
Yeah. Welcome back. Anthony, I know you're somewhat of a global warming expert, and we recently bailed out of the Paris Accords, and then California abruptly went over and signed our own agreement with China. What's up with that? Tell me what your thoughts are on that.
Well, the idea behind the Paris Accord was to basically get all countries to cooperate. Well, I can't think of a time in history when such an event ever occurred. I mean, first of all, getting all countries to cooperate to do something is like herding cats. It's not going to happen. And so, you know, but, you know, this had the whole viewpoint of noble cause corruption behind it, where we're doing something noble here. We're going to save the earth. We're going to make the planet better. We're going to help people and, you know, blah, blah, blah. And, of course, to do that, it needs money. And the people with the most money, you know, have to pay the most. Well, the United States, of course, already threw in something on the order of $1 billion plus dollars or so onto it when they first signed up. And yet none of the other countries seem to chip in. They're just waiting for the U.S. to throw that money out there so they can grab it up and do things with it. And essentially what this was a feel-good wealth distribution scheme. The amount of if everybody cooperated and if everybody did the greenhouse gas reductions that they said that they would do, the amount of change might be about 0.2 degrees over the life cycle of the whole agreement. Well, the catastrophic projections that they have are much higher than that if you believe those things. So what's the point? What did it actually do of any significance? It didn't. It didn't really have any teeth. And the whole thing was simply voluntary. These were these voluntary targets that you agreed to. But, you know, to participate, you have to put money into it. So it really was little more than a wealth distribution scheme. And the people that are in Sacramento don't seem to understand this because, well, you heard my story about the electric car. Money isn't a real issue to them. They don't care about money. It's other people's money. We're going to spend it. It doesn't matter. There's no downside for us. And so that's really why California jumped onto it. They want to feel good about it. They want to be the leader in feel-goodness, and they want to do their part to get that 0.2 degrees out of that whole thing. Well, yeah. California's contribution to it isn't even going to matter anywhere close to that, because California's greenhouse gas emissions have already fallen significantly because of changes. And in fact, the whole United States, if you track the data from the Energy Information Administration, EIA, and you look at it over the last decade, greenhouse gas emissions have fallen in the United States over the past decade. Part of it has to do with a switch to natural gas. Part of it has to do, a small part of it has to do with renewable energy such as solar and wind kicking in. But the reality is that we're already voluntarily reducing our greenhouse gas emissions while China, India, and other third world countries are increasing theirs. So, you know, we're paying the penalty here in the United mm-hmm. States. And thank goodness President Trump had the good sense to get the heck out of that thing.
Now, did we already kick in $1 billion into that program?
As far as I know, yeah. We were on the hook for $100 billion. Wow. I believe they put $1 billion down initially. Jeez. How much of that they've put in since then, I don't know.
And it begs the question, what did they do with the $1 billion that we have so far kicked in? I mean,
Where does it go?
Where does it go? I mean, is it they just hand it out to these countries to implement their greenhouse programs,
no
of which never happened?
As they used to say on Star Trek, I'm a meteorologist, not an economist.
True story.
But I can tell you that the money went into the great maw of the UN somewhere.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I know they were really shook up. And I heard rumbles that Germany might be pulling out of that as well. Did that happen?
It's possibly they might. They're changing the way they're doing things. So they're in a crisis. They've added coal plants, and you know they shut down a bunch of their nuclear stuff after Fukushima, and Fukushima generated a lot of irrational fear. And some background: before I got into meteorology, I was actually interested in nuclear engineering, and I took some courses in nuclear. And so I understand nuclear reactors pretty well. I actually designed one, not a working one, just on paper for one of my papers in college. But, you know, the whole fear of nuclear is really, just like global warming, it's overblown. Just the other day, I got an email from someone wanting to know if I could tell them what the radiation levels were in the ocean off of California, because they wanted to come out and visit, but they were afraid to go swimming in the ocean. And the fact is that the radiation levels haven't changed in California. The whole Fukushima thing is overblown. No single person has died from radiation from Fukushima. It's just hype. And that's a lot of what the global warming stuff is. It's oversold hype.
Well, now, wait a minute. I've been hearing that all the blue-green algae is dead. Whales are beaching themselves. Porpoises are dying. And you can't eat seafood out of the Pacific because of Fukushima. So I think you need to upgrade your information there a little bit. Alex Jones, who is an authority on this, says we're all in really serious trouble. We need to buy Geiger counters.
Well,
does
you know,
work? Maniac.
If you see any surfers down there with three arms, you'll know something's really up.
Yeah.
Oh, my
God. They seem to be having as good a time as ever down there surfing in Southern California.
Well, how do these guys get away with all this stuff? I mean, because I'm looking at the things on your site, and I'm like, ooh, I want to talk about that and that and that, and obviously we don't have that kind of time. So, like the one article on here from the Daily Telegraph, there is no such thing as affordable renewable energy. Good Lord, I think we all know this. I mean, if we didn't subsidize wind and solar would have gone away a long time ago.
Exactly. It can't compete on the open market by itself. It needs subsidies in order to work. And that's the problem with it. The market's not driving it. The government's driving it through mm-hmm. subsidies. And when the subsidies dry up, so does the renewable energy projects.
Yeah, and then I'm looking at Earth is not in the midst of a sixth mass extinction. Gosh, you know, those guys hype that thing all the time. You know, the ice the ice at the poles, big fear. The ocean is becoming acid.
Oh, yeah, just the acidification of the oceans. Is that real?
Well,
Lord Monckton pretty much capped that one for us once.
Well, okay. Let me just put it to you this way. The ocean is basic. It has a pH up around 8. If you know your high school chemistry, a neutral pH for pure water is 7. Okay, that's neutral. And anything below that is acidic, all right? And so the pH of the oceans has not crossed the neutral line, has not crossed 7 on its way down into 6.9 or anything yet. It's not even close. What's happened is, over the last 50 years, we've seen a change of about 0.1 from 8.2 to 8.1. And so they say, oh, it's getting more acidic. Well, it's not acidic yet. It's still basic. The oceans haven't changed dramatically. And it's again, more hype. And their viewpoint is that extra CO2 in the atmosphere will create new acidic chemistry changes in the ocean, and therefore the ocean will become more acidic, and when it becomes acidic, everything dies, and, you know, oh my goodness, there's the end of the world right there.
Yep. Right. And it is kind of amazing, because all of these things, I mean, there are people who, and there are a lot of them, that actually believe all this, because there's so much of it being pumped out through movies and news, and, you know, use the word news, you know, of course, with quotes around it, but there's so much coming out about all this. People have become really fearful that all of this is actually coming, and yet they don't seem to do the math. You know, back when Al Gore told us all the, you know, crazy crap he told us back during his thing, none of that stuff happened, and yet nobody says, okay, none of it happened. I think these guys might be up to, you know, up to no good.
Yeah, it's preying on fear to drive an agenda, and as it's right now, there's so much research involved with global warming and climate. It's become its own industry, and so it's going to be very, very hard to kill. It's a fear-based industry. The industry has been on hype from day one. Let me give you a perfect example, because I was on the other side of the equation over 2 decades ago. I actually believed we had a real problem. When I worked for the TV station KHSL Channel 12 in Chico, I remember June of 1988, and I tuned it in specifically. I was standing in the control room of my station watching a live news feed from Senate Hearing House in Washington. Dr. James Hansen was testifying, and he was talking about global warming based on change in atmospheric carbon dioxide, mm-hmm. and he presented 3 scenarios, and these scenarios were based on models, and this is what's going to happen if we don't do something about it. And I was actually convinced at that point, and I became an activist on the other side of the equation. I got involved with the National Arbor Day Foundation, and I got a bunch of TV meteorologists together, and on Earth Day of 1990, we put together a program to have these TV meteorologists present the problem to their viewers and get people to plant trees. And on and on and on. I was full hook, line, and sinker into this thing. But when you look beyond the headlines, you discover, wait a minute. And that's what happened to me in the mid-90s. All of a sudden, I started looking at things differently, and it had to do with the fact that I had a good friend here in Chico who was the former state climatologist, Jim Goodrich. He moved here and retired here, and he began to show me some of his data from weather stations in California. And he showed me some pictures of some of the weather stations that were used to measure climate in California. And my jaw hit the floor. I was flabbergasted. He showed me a picture of the temperature and precipitation observing station in Mount Hamilton down in the Bay Area. Mount Hamilton is where they have the observatory. It has a high density of scientists, okay? Well, this particular weather station was on the roof of a parking structure, and it had a trash incinerator next to it. I'm not kidding. Okay? Now,
here comes the CO2 measurement.
The temperature, the way that climate trends are derived is you take the high and low temperature for each day measured by the weather station, you average that, you get your average temperature for the day, and that goes on for, you know, average temperature for a month, average temperature for a year, and they plot these temperatures, okay? Well, the high temperature obviously had to have changed, and, you know, because of the proximity to the
trash burner. Yeah.
I mean, and this is where scientists are, and no one spoke up, okay? Another example, and I have pictures of this on my webpage, University of Arizona, at the meteorology department, they had a weather station in the parking lot out front of the offices. Seriously, it had a chain-link fence around it, and there were cars parked on either side of it. We discovered this in 2007, and we put the pictures up, and people were just, they went nuts over this because, you know, how dare we criticize these people at this fantastic institution and blah, 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 and it's been around since 1857 and on and on and on. You know, they were just simply mad at me because I'd exposed this ridiculousness of this thing. But the bottom line was is that it used to be out in a field when the University of Arizona was an agricultural type of campus, and, you know, more buildings got built, and they had to move it, and, you know, they kept having to move it. And finally, there was so much in the way of infrastructure that had been put in place at the University of Arizona. They had no place left for it, for this weather station that had been around since 1857. So they put it in the parking lot out front. Again, these are scientists,
yeah.
Atmospheric scientists, okay? Yeah. And this is a climate station. Right?
Wow.
That's just, you know, and that's the stuff that those of us who didn't pursue a career in science, it makes our heads explode. Because even what little we retained, you know, from our education, it's like, you know what? None of this makes any sense. Anthony, we have to take a really quick break, and then we'll come right back. There's just so much of this, and I as I was reading through your website, you were like, climate hoax, you know, climate debunker. You were like Climate Hoax Central. I was kind of excited about it. It's like, gee, what do we want to talk about? All right, we'll be right back. Our guest is Anthony Watts. You can find all of our information at wethepeopleradio.us. Nice little weather song for you. All right, Anthony. Back to you driving the bus here.
Hey,
Bill's dying to ask you about CO2, though.
Yeah, what about CO2? Is CO2 a pollutant?
I'm sorry, what was the question?
Is CO2 an actual pollutant, or is it really a non-issue?
Well, it depends upon who you ask. It was never, ever considered a pollutant until the EPA got their fangs into it. But no, it's not a pollutant. It's part of the life cycle on Earth. Trees and plants uptake CO2 and produce oxygen in return. We as animals and humans and, you know, the animal kingdom produce CO2 as part of our normal daily respiration. So would you classify something that is essential to the life cycle of Earth as being a pollutant? I don't think so.
Mm-hmm.
But to be able to use it for an agenda, yeah, you have to demonize it, so they call it a pollutant. But the fact of the matter is that even though carbon dioxide has increased from the supposed pre-industrial level of 350 parts per million to the over 400 parts per million that we have now, the Earth is greening. NASA has been able to monitor the Earth through their satellites, and I have several stories on my website talking about how the Earth is greening. The Sahara is shrinking, for example. It's getting a little greener around the edges. We've seen crop production increase thanks to CO2, some of it due to, better technology and better ways of farming. But one thing that's not well known, but it's irrefutable, is that NASA confirmed that globally the leaf surface area of the world's forest increased a surface area almost equal to the United States over the last 30 years.
Wow.
And they, in their paper, said CO2 is the driver. But you don't see this reported in the news media, and I'll say this as a member of the news media, being in television, you know, for 25 years, and on radio, that, you know, if it bleeds, it leads. The talk about bad news always seems to take precedence over the good news, unless it's a, what we call a kicker story about a cute little pet or somebody doing something funny or cute. The fact of the matter is that good news is not reported and not given the same scrutiny and the same coverage that bad news is. And that's why you don't hear about such things.
Right, right.
And there just seems to be... not a lot of education to start with. They have the ability to speak in fact, but they don't. And when you question it, I guess that's always my problem, because when you question any of this, they don't come back at you with corrected science. They come at you with emotion.
Exactly. And they brand you a climate denier.
I know. I'm a really big climate denier.
Stuff like that. And here's the thing, and I didn't get back to this, I didn't talk about this before, but when I watched that presentation to Congress back in 1988 with Dr. James Hansen from NASA, what you didn't know, and we found out later, what was going on behind the scenes there in that hearing room. The hearing room, the day of the hearing was picked on purpose. It was a June day, and they picked that day on purpose. They called the Weather Service up ahead of time and ask what is likely to be the hottest day in the month of June over the next few weeks.
Classic. Right.
That's number one. And the sponsor who brought in Dr. Hansen was Senator Timothy Wirth of Colorado. And he admitted on a Frontline interview that not only did he go ahead and choose the day ahead of time based on what the Weather Service said, this SOB went in and disabled the air conditioning. I kid you not. He said it on camera. I've got it. He disabled the air conditioning and opened the window so that the hearing room was hot. And he said, while the interview and the presentation was going on, the cameras were rolling and people were sweating, and it was bliss. It was stagecraft.
Total.
Here we have a guy from NASA going out to present science, and he had to have stagecraft done to make it believable.
Wow.
Is that science?
No.
I don't think so.
But nothing, not a whole lot has changed. And you said that was in 1988. And since then, NASA is, I don't know, I think they're one of the biggest.
Well, they got busted cooking the numbers.
Yeah, they're throwing all kinds of false stuff. And NOAA, I mean, they're throwing all kinds of false information out there and kind of leading the whole fear-mongering story.
Yeah, well, that particular scientist, James Hansen, has done quite a bit of fear-mongering. He's no longer with NASA. He retired. But before he retired, he equated coal to he said, you know, trains delivering coal were death trains, nice. You know, and he had all kinds of rhetoric going on and so forth. And his understudy, Dr. Gavin Schmidt, was on an interview with John Stossel with another scientist who had an alternate view, and this was Dr. Roy Spencer of the University of Alabama. And this guy, Gavin Schmidt, is so caught up in his own importantness and so caught up in the point of, I'm right and you're wrong, he refused to appear on camera with this other scientist. Both of them are published scientists in journals. Both of them have a long career. And yet this guy was so self-important, he told Stossel, I'll only appear on the set live with you if he's not there. And so they actually accommodated him and switched him out. These are the kind of people that are driving the global warming data. He's the keeper of the data. This guy is actually in control of the data that NASA produces for the surface temperature record.
So what's the agenda? Why are they doing this?
Well, as I touched on earlier, it's noble cause corruption. This is something that hails from police departments when someone, they know the guy's dirty, they know he did it, but they don't have the evidence on him, so they plant a gun or they stick some drugs in his bag or whatever, and the guy goes to jail. Now, this is well known in the law enforcement community as noble cause corruption. We're doing this for the greater good. We're getting the scumbag off the streets. They're doing the same thing in science now. There's adjustments to data. There's embellishments of data, there's embellishments of equations, of computer models, embellishments of the threat, and they're doing it because they truly believe that carbon dioxide will be the end of us all, that it will cause mass extinction, that it will cause the melting of the ice caps, that it will cause an uninhabitable planet. And so, okay, if we have to fudge it a little bit to make our point, just like Dr. Hansen did back in 1988 by turning off the air conditioning, it's okay. We're saving the planet. That's what a lot of the mindset of these people is all about. The reality, however, is entirely different. And the whole thing is predicated on climate sensitivity to carbon dioxide. And there's a calculation involved in several models. But basically, it boils down to how much will the atmosphere heat up based on a doubling of carbon dioxide in the atmosphere? That's the standard for calculation. And there's no solid answer on this. There are numbers that range from half a degree centigrade all the way up to 8 degrees centigrade based
on
climate.
That's a big spread.
Yeah.
It is. And so there's no certainty. And so there's a large uncertainty spread in all of this. Yes, carbon dioxide is a greenhouse gas. I will say that, and I believe that. However, it has a logarithmic effect in the atmosphere, and this is well known. Even the IPCC said it in their report, their AR4 report. And to give you an idea of what this means is that the more carbon dioxide you put into the atmosphere, the less sensitive the atmosphere becomes to it. I'll use an analogy. You have a bowl of soup that's served to you at a restaurant. You taste it, and you think, that's a little bland. So you put some salt into it. You taste it again. Maybe just a little more salt, okay? So you pour some more salt into it. Now you taste it again, and you put too much salt in it, and all of a sudden, it's too salty. You can continue to put salt in that soup, and it's still going to taste to you as too salty. Your taste buds' response to the salt is saturated. Well, that's what's happening in the atmosphere. The atmosphere's response in the long-wave infrared band to the carbon dioxide is almost saturated. And so additional increases aren't going to make that much difference. And this is held up when we look at observations, especially satellite observations over the last 30 years. We don't see the dramatic upward spikes in the satellite observations of the atmosphere. However, when you look at the surface temperatures, the ones that are measured by, you know, parking lot parking lot weather stations at the University of Arizona and other things, you do see an increase. Perfect example, city of Las Vegas, Nevada. and this is, I have this data from their National Weather Service office. There is a huge increase in temperature, average temperature in Las Vegas. And that's the key. The average temperature has increased. But if you split it out and plot the high and low temperatures separately, the high temperatures have actually receded just a small amount over the last 50 years. However, the low temperature has increased dramatically. Why? Well, because at night, the way this all works in the atmosphere is, okay, you've all stood next to a building at sunset or after sunset that had been in the sun all day, and you can feel the heat radiating from the bricks of the building,
sure.
Right? Okay? All right. Imagine now the city of Las Vegas, which used to be nothing more than a little backwater town before the mob moved in there and started building casinos, now it's just giant megaplex of gaming and concrete and asphalt. It's grown tremendously. It gets heated up during the day by sunlight. At night, it re-radiates that heat back into the atmosphere. The average temperature has increased, but what really has happened is that the low temperature has increased dramatically. And if you look at the low temperatures plotted from McCarran Airport, it's going way up, but the high temperatures have not. And this is the real signature of infrastructure, and it's what I've been studying. Another good example, Chicago O'Hare Airport.
Mm-hmm.
Chicago O'Hare Airport. If you've ever flown in there, you have a tag, a luggage tag, that says ORD. And everyone knows that stands for O'Hare if you travel a lot. But it really doesn't. ORD stands for what it used to be before it was O'Hare Airport, and that's Orchard Field.
Wow.
Now, way back at its inception, it was that. It was a field. There were orchards on either side of it, and it was more agriculturally oriented than anything else. It was way out in the suburbs from downtown Chicago. But it's changed, and it's now this megaplex of concrete and asphalt, and it's was the busiest airport in the United States in 2014. And they still measure the temperature there. And you look at the temperature over the past 50 years, it's gone way up, and it's in the low temperature, in the low temperatures mostly.
Right.
And that's what we're facing globally. The low temperatures overnight have increased at a lot of these stations. But the high temperatures have not, but the average has increased, and they're using the average. And they're not telling you the whole story.
Wow, I'd never heard that.
I'd never heard that either. But that makes a ton of sense.
Of course you've never heard it, because most people are too lazy to look beyond the headlines. And I've spent the last decade doing that. I look beyond the headlines. I find the root causes of things, and I write about them. And I catch all matters of hell for doing so. But the fact is that you can't deny these things that I've found.
Sure, it is what it is. Well, all of these things, I just find seem to be predicated on some little shred of truth. Like, I mean, that's a great example in Las Vegas, that the average temperature is increasing, but the high temperature never moves. So, but I just see it all the time. What about this? What about the ice thing? Do we have time to get into the ice thing? Because
sure.
I get sick of hearing about the stupid ice is melting, and then 5 seconds later, the ice has never been thicker. It's like, ugh. Okay.
Well, that's not exactly true. It hasn't never been thicker. That's a misnomer. That's wrong. But what I can tell you is this. In 2005 or thereabouts, the polar ice in the Arctic, at the North Pole area, took a drop, and it has reached a new stable level since then, and it's kind of banding about this newer, lower stable level. Meanwhile, Antarctica has had dramatic increases in ice extent over the past 20 years or so. And everyone's concerned about the Arctic, but they're not really all that concerned about the Antarctic. There isn't a temperature increase going on there. The ice extent around the continent has gotten thicker, but everybody's worried about the Arctic because of the polar bears. They've become the poster child
right.
for that.
Yeah.
And it's just, the World Wildlife Foundation, sells all kinds of polar bear merchandise, for people that are concerned about climate. It's become a big deal. And the fact of the matter is that, yeah, the Arctic has lost some ice. It's not gone. People claimed it would be gone by now. There are several prominent people, including Gore, One fellow, a climate researcher in England, said it would be gone by now, but it hasn't. It just reached a new stable lower level, and a lot of it has to do with something called albedo. And this is the color or the grayness of the ice. And what's happened is that I blame China and I blame India. They produced all kinds of emissions through their industrial revolution, which began, you know, after Nixon opened it up. And the soot has settled on a lot of the ice in the Arctic. It doesn't reach the Antarctic because we don't get a crossing of the equator boundary. But the Arctic's ice has gotten dirtier, and it's gotten darker, and so it absorbs more sunlight, and it melts easier. And that's there are studies on this that show this. You don't hear about that on the evening news because that's an inconvenient truth.
Right, right. And I might want to add, too, that the polar bear population,
there's another
I think I heard the other day,
is
actually higher than it's been in, I don't know, 100 years or some stupid thing. There's
not quite 100 years, but since they changed the hunting rules on polar bears, and that was some, 60 years ago. But the point is that, yes, there are more polar bears now than there ever were before, and no, they're not dying because of lack of ice.
And they're not standing tippy-toe on a little tiny iceberg as it floats by.
Polar bears can swim huge distances. They will often swim huge distances and get up on a piece of ice looking for seals.
Right.
See, and at the end of the day, all of this depends on the public not being very well-schooled in science. And also not being very good investigative reporters.
Well, this has been...
Can't get away with it otherwise.
It's been a lot of fun. Anthony, thanks for coming on. We need to have you back.
Yeah.
Anytime.
Anytime. I'm already sending him an email that says, hey, anytime.
Yeah,
keep
absolutely.
Keep our information.
It's been very interesting.
All righty.
We really appreciate it. Have a great day. Thanks for spending the time with us.
Sure thing.
All righty, and that has been Anthony Watts. You can find him, What's Up With That, W-A-T-T-S, upwiththat.com. And we'll be back with G. Edward Griffin. We're going to continue our discussion of the climate, the climate hoax. How's that? So you're listening to We the People Radio. You can find us online at wethepeopleradio.us.